Coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for another episode of Tech Talk with your host, Joey Klein.
Welcome to the latest episode of Tech Talk, and we have two fantastic executives for you to talk to today of Atlanta-based companies. First, we're going to talk to Raj Chowdhury of Alloy.
Hi there, how's things?
Doing well, looking forward to chatting. And then we're going to chat with Brooke McLean of MarketWake, CEO and founder. How are you, Brooke?
Doing great. Thrilled to be here.
Okay, all right. We're going to go alphabetical as normal, so we're going to start with Raj. Raj, how are you doing today?
Oh, not too bad, you know. Getting through the lovely weather of the weekend, it's great.
Was it lovely, or do you have allergies?
I have allergies, but I found the secret ingredient of the right kind of allergy meds, so I'm good.
Just like a whole thing of Claritin crushed up into
anything that works, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I hear you. It's about survival. So let's talk Alloy. So we want to get into, obviously, what Alloy does and how it's growing here in Atlanta. But a little background on yourself and how you got to Alloy.
Sure. So I accidentally started an agency. I'll say that. I was, as sometimes do after school, I ended up traveling around the world and kind of fell into web design and ended up starting my first agency with my old college roommate, a guy called Jeff Hellmeyer, out of Toronto, Canada. And he was actually still in his dorm room in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we started Spun Logic, and kind of winged it, if you will. Grew the agency pretty well. We were based out of Atlanta. That's how I ended up here in Atlanta. And then just, did great work, just had a fantastic team. We exited that business and then went into another venture that pushed into it, which was called Engage. And then from there, sold into Publicis. So I kind of started getting a history of, a lot of kind of M&A, building up units and selling the units and so forth. So my background is actually creative, which is kind of odd. So I moved from creative to really operating units and moved much more into the finance side of things. So, fast forward, built up and sold 4 units. I really enjoy building up teams, love the work still, and just love the people aspect of agencies and the culture that comes with it.
So why do it again? You don't have hobbies at this point, addicted? What's the drive for doing this with Alloy, and why do you think Alloy kind of fills a niche that your other ventures did
not? Yeah, so every time I've gone into a venture, it's trying to create an agency unit that perhaps, the market's underserving, or that there's an area that can you can really take advantage of. So as I was thinking through my, my next adventure, if you will, and between everything I do sabbaticals, by the way, which is also a great kind of break point between them, but I started thinking about the type of marketing that goes on with technology firms, and really more so the nature of transactional marketing versus large brand creative marketing that is lacking with a lot of kind of B2B marketing. And so we seeked out to basically create a unit to tackle larger concept ideas as opposed to just transactional marketing, which is very, very typical, especially in the tech sector. So Alloy is built around really bringing together best-in-class agencies. So we acquire units. We put them together into the Alloy brand. And then we stitch up the capabilities to basically push into technology sector primarily, but also large-scale nonprofits, and really through ideation. So we can bring storytelling to precision execution throughout. So kind of PR to CX, if you will.
Why, on the surface, one might look at this focus on technology companies and nonprofits and think that there's not much overlap there? What is the relationship, if any, between those two industries, or at least in terms of serving that clientele?
Yeah. So the technology sector moves extremely fast. So that's why we love it, right? It's not stagnant. It's constantly being challenged. So, as a brand architect, within the Alloy side of things, we're out to disrupt the agency industry itself, both the comm side of things as well as the digital side, which typically don't marry up often very well. So from a disruption standpoint, we're trying also to disrupt how agencies operate. And technology brands tend to allow you to experiment a lot more fluidly than, say, retail or tourism or, you know, manufacturing as an example, right? Those will be kind of tried and true, hard to kind of really push new concepts and ideas. So that allows us to basically really reinvent how we work and how we work with those clients. And then similarly on the large scale nonprofits, that's to be honest, we can take a lot of those kind of principles and drive it into the nonprofits, mm-hmm. which tend not to innovate that often, but their dollars have to go extremely far, you know. And so from that perspective, there's a tie-in from how we enable experiences and technology and PR, but also from a purpose standpoint, it's also great for our employees. So, you know, culture is a huge component of any agency unit. Mm-hmm. So for us, those are purpose-driven elements and that the work that's meaningful. All work is meaningful, but sometimes when you're doing some of the nonprofit work, it's very meaningful for employees and they enjoy that side of things.
Look, I can understand that, right? You know, we do our best to give 110% to all of our clients, but not all projects are created equal in terms of just the internal passion that you might bring to the particular cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and especially in local markets where we operate, whether it's New Orleans or Atlanta, there's certain things that you know matter much more to folks locally.
Sure. You want to do good work. You also want to be a good corporate citizen.
Absolutely.
Your personal background is actually of particular interest to me just because I feel, it's a, you know, somewhat of a, you know, trite statement that our background, of course, influences how we act in the world. But you have a particularly interesting one that I'd be curious if you've, I don't know, subconsciously or consciously kind of drawn any parallels or lessons that have helped you in your professional life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so first off, I'm a, you know, a bit of a mutt of the world, right? As you know, so born in East Africa, grew up in London, then traveled everywhere, right? And so I've also, you know, got to realize that, you know, the people side of the business matters way more than the money side of the business.
Sure.
That's, you know, you build a team that fights together, that are culturally bound together, you can do some great work. And ultimately, if you do great work, you can build a successful business. If you just focus on the numbers on its own, it's really not enough to move the needle. So a lot of my parallels around the communities I've lived in, and Atlanta's become home to that, but it's also the teams that we pull together and how we kind of interact socially. I kind of work in the mantra of kind of work hard, you know, play hard side of things, and very, very in tune to that within kind of the service industry. You work hard for your clients, you make them shine, you do great work, and you'll get rewarded as a result. And so that kind of prevails in every unit that we work with, and the types of units that we try and pull into the Alloy platform.
You talked about people, and look, hopefully, it's not necessarily a groundbreaking statement, right? That the people are the what matter most in business. You would hope that any good leader, after a you know certain period of time, generally recognizes that because the people are what make the money and what make the organization actually go. You have, of course, at this point, recruited for many, many different jobs across a number of different agencies. And I'm curious if you have any best practices, just seems too corporate of a term, but any particular mantra or guiding principles that you go by when you're looking at candidates?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few, right? And they vary based on roles, obviously. But in general, I'd say that, you know, especially in our industry, you know, if you don't have a natural ability to want to learn or aren't afraid to run into the fire, you know, it's hard for you to survive in the agency world. You got to be able to do things other people haven't done before. And so that kind of natural learning ability and curiosity and ability to not be afraid of the unknown. So that's one aspect. The second, you know, I think I may have mentioned this to you, but I always ask a question in all the interviews, which is, you know, what is on your bucket list, right? And that's always an indication of the person's true passions and character, right? If it's something to do with, you know, something cause-based or perhaps travel or a hobby or something like that, you know that's truly a passion. If it's around, I want to buy a sports car or I want to buy a yacht, mm-hmm. they're typically not going to work well within Alloy because they're money-driven in their mindset as opposed to purpose-driven.
I think that that is in a universe now in which I feel like we have somewhat of a split workforce. We have a workforce that I think some of whom want to be around people and grow, and some of whom want to sit behind a computer and find the easy way out. And when you choose the latter path, all you're really getting out of your employer is money. And when all you're getting out of your employer is money, it makes it much easier to jump to something else. And so I think that you eventually see the difference, because if all you're getting is money, that is not going to fulfill you long term.
Exactly.
That's not to say that you shouldn't be compensated fairly, but if that's literally all it is, there's just not going to be anything keeping you being that loyal to that organization.
No, I agree. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, you do the best work when you're around the best people, and you know, the best people get the best work out of you, and I think people who want to do great work, there's a difference between doing great work and just getting a paycheck.
That is correct. And yes, I think that your point about just being around the right people, I mean, that's life, really. You are a sum of the people with whom you spend the most time. And I forget who said this or if it was even someone notable, but said, I never want to be the most attractive or wealthiest person in the room. I was like, I like that, because, you know, you should have people around you that are challenging you in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and even my own role, right? I don't want to be the only person thinking about things. I want to be challenged, and I want to have incredible leaders around me who are pushing me as well.
So let's talk about Alloy a bit more granularly. You guys had some big news in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so you know, we've had actually a number of just different kind of announcements, but the biggest one is that we moved. We got a great investment from the Purpose Group, which is an investment firm. Actually, ironically, started by Jeff Hellemeyer and David Cummings. Jeff was my old roommate, as I said, and David. We've all known each other for a while, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners probably know David Cummings. So it's a great infusion of capital into Alloy. It allows us to kind of continue kind of our aggressive M&A strategy that we've been using. Obviously, we acquired a unit in 2022, which was ARPR, which is kind of a best-in-class tech PR firm. Mm-hmm. And then last year, we acquired Narwhal Digital, which is just a fantastic kind of brand creative CX shop. So we'll be looking to continue that kind of path over the years. So we'll be using you know, capital from the Purpose Group to kind of fuel Alloy's M&A growth strategy around it. So it's also the other side of things is it's great to be back in business with Jeff and David. I have a ton of respect for those guys. You know, they're extremely influential in our industry as well, both on the tech side of things as well as on the marketing side of things. So on a personal level, that's fantastic. And I know my leadership team is kind of pumped around that as well.
Yeah, that's big. You know, I find it interesting when I talk to organizations who a big part of their growth is, you know, M&A strategy. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, yes, there's a technological fit, but at the end of the day, as we've been talking about, I think is big or a bigger piece than that is a cultural fit as well. And I am curious kind of how you go about sourcing opportunities and sussing out, does it fit both of those buckets?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the most important side is the cultural fit, yeah. Right? And unfortunately, I think in a lot of M&A, a lot of people focus on the financials, right, and try and show that there's a cross-sell element and the economics are going to make sense. Yes, the economics have to make sense, but if you don't nail the people side of things, then you really don't have an asset that you can kind of grow out through. So, we look at shoring up capabilities, but really through talent. So when we're looking at units, we're looking at from a capability standpoint where we need to basically own the end-to-end side of things. So we already own, I'd say, the PR comm side of things to the brand and CX side of things. So we'll be looking to kind of shore up other elements, whether it's on the data side of things or the MarTech side of things. So those are the next targets, or even just amplifying existing capabilities. But first and foremost, we're looking at, you know, great founders, mm-hmm. Great teams, and great work that matters most. The numbers themselves matter less to us, in honesty, because we bring units into our platform and we already have the infrastructure in place, both on the financial side, the HR side, the sales and marketing side, and the workflow infrastructure side of things. So that's less of a concern. So we're not necessarily looking at units to bring those capabilities. We're just really looking at fantastic talent and folks who want to take it to the next level within our platform.
So I know ARPR is a local Atlanta firm. Is Narwhal local or they?
Yeah. So actually, ARPR was out of both Atlanta and New Orleans. Okay. That's kind of how we have our footing in New Orleans.
I see.
And Narwhal is actually here in Atlanta. It just happened that both were in Atlanta. We weren't necessarily sourcing in Atlanta, but it works out sometimes. You know the entrepreneurs, so that brings a level of trust. And then sometimes doing acquisitions, you don't know what you're getting until you close. When we bring a unit in, we're sourcing anywhere from 60 to 75 companies. Initially just to bring it down to the right fit and make sure that the people side of things. And then when we integrate, we're focusing right off the bat on cultural integration. That's the primary focus. And then we move into the financials.
Okay. So I think you probably answered my question. Is this a national or regional strategy? It sounds like this is national. Yep. If it's in my own backyard, so be it, but it doesn't have to be.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, our workforce has changed quite a bit from the pandemic side of things. So a centralized office strategy isn't the strategy anymore. It's really finding the best talent, the best work, regardless of location. So we're open to all locations.
Is there a certain target that you have in terms of acquisitions per year?
So, the hardest thing in acquisition is there's teams that can get acquired, and then there's teams that know how to acquire. We're targeting one a year right now for the next couple of years. And then as the team is used to that pattern of acquiring, we're moving to two a year. So that's the general plan. So we'll stay fairly aggressive in the marketplace within that. But the harder challenge, obviously, is bringing in a unit, making sure that, our management team is set up for it, our systems are set up for it. We can culturally integrate quickly. We can culturally move through and grow and it's hard because every single unit has a different, DNA and different culture. So you don't want to, you're buying something that's special. So you don't want to ruin that. So you want to add to it.
That's right. You've done this a couple times now.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, as you have really integrated your experience into Alloy, what have you found? It's sort of two sides of the same coin. It's, have you learned something that you would go back and tell your younger self? Or have you taken experiences that were maybe fumbles in the past that you have corrected this time around?
Well, I think the biggest aspect is, a lot of deals are done based on numbers, right? And, what I found is, and especially in the private, because I came from the private equity side of things, right? And so that's the basis of a lot of deals. So the numbers matter. It's not that they don't matter. But I truly believe that there's an element of understanding the capabilities you're adding to the team and understanding the threats to both teams and openly talking about it. And so we prescribe to a very kind of open management system. So when we're going through that side of things, even through kind of the honeymoon phase, if you will, the pre-diligence side of things, we're very open to what's going to happen. So folks understand their roles, what's going to happen, which teams are getting integrated, which ones are standalone, and so forth. So even through the pre-diligence period, I found in the past where we've moved fast through the financials and then created an integration plan after the fact. And that's not always the best thing. Sometimes you have to start the integration plans actually in pre-diligence. So that's one big aspect. The other is not to overthink a deal, right? You can over try and correct to mitigate risk just kind of cycle through way too much time and effort on something that probably isn't going to be a big deal. And so I've learned over the years that, yes, you're trying to mitigate risk, but you're never going to be able to mitigate all risk.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is all super exciting. Raj, if someone wants to learn a little bit more about Alloy, where would they go? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So alloycrew.com is our website. You can certainly go there, check out our work, check out our people, the different types of experiences, and certainly find us on LinkedIn, again, Alloy Crew, or Instagram or anything like that. For me personally, you can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest place. Just Raj Chaudhry. There's, I think, two of us out there, but yeah. One's a Harvard professor. He's doing fantastic. And then there's me.
Do you guys ever get each other's emails?
You know, I don't, but people mistake me for him because he talks a lot about his interesting professor who talks about work culture and the changes in work behavior that's happened, mm-hmm. Since the pandemic, certainly, but office culture to work at home. So people think sometimes that I've written those papers. I'm like, no, this guy's way smarter than me. So, yeah, but I shared similar philosophies, so people mistake.
It sounds like there are worse people to be mistaken for.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. All right, well, Raj, thanks a lot for sharing the experience.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Brooke, how are we doing?
Doing great.
Yeah?
Loved listening. Fantastic story.
Thank you.
Well, I think, look, the reason we don't have anyone on here who's a dud in terms of storytelling. So
it's true.
The goal is
you filter well.
We want to make this interesting. So speaking of stories, you are the founder and CEO of MarketWeek.
Yes. That is correct.
And you have had entrepreneurial experience in the past, mm-hmm. right? But I believe this is kind of your first venture of your own in terms of like full founder.
It's true. It's true. Well, it's funny listening to your story because we've crossed over. My original entry into the startup world was actually with David Cummings also. So fantastic. Congratulations there. I was working with him on one of his companies for a while, ended up becoming the CEO for a time, and learned so much. It was one of those phases. I had started MarketWeek, came back to be the CEO of the company while it was mm-hmm. undergoing a pivot. I say all the time, I would never do both again at the same time, but I would never change the fact that I did because of how much I learned and what I can now apply to MarketWeek.
That's right. I think that, when people ask you, like, do you have regrets? Would you change a thing? It's like, well, if you're generally happy with where you are, you can't change
a thing
because that one flap of the butterfly then changes your present as well.
Absolutely. And it was interesting doing software and services at the same time, mm-hmm. right? So it was, they're very different ways that you run both companies. And the crash course in software was extensive. Working with investors, building a product, having CTO, doing sales, transferring everything from a previous version into what it became, mm-hmm. while trying to build behind the scenes the services side, because I knew at the end of the day that's where I would go back to.
Yep.
Once we got it to a stable place, and now fast forward 6-7 years later, we just acquired a software company, Punchlist, and so now I'm back and managing software and services at the same time. So
yeah.
It is funny how that happens. You think, wow, that was really, really hard. And all it is just preparing you for a later date.
David Cummings does seem to touch all things Atlanta.
He does.
Companies for you too. And of course, I was touring his new real estate acquisition the other day. And I think Atlanta has always had good boosters, but I think that it just, certainly in the past decade and a half, we have a group of kind of new executives that have experienced success that are really giving back in a really amazing way.
Agree.
So let's talk about why you went back to the services side of things. What was it that drew you to that part of the industry?
I love the energy mm-hmm. of the services. I think that in order, and Raj alluded to this a little bit, you have to have the ability to work with a lot of different people, a lot of different industries, and retain a great deal of information simultaneously. So for those of us who are fast-paced, we like learning a lot, even outside of work. Those of us who are excited and not overwhelmed by the rush of tight deadlines, mm-hmm. I think services is an unbelievably powerful outlet for this type of person. And it is not for everyone. There are a lot of people who prefer the brand side where there's a singular focus and singular product and singular aspect to their role. We're on the services side, the agency side. You wear a lot of different hats. You're working with a lot of different team members, lots of different personalities. And I think that for those of us who are energized by that, not overwhelmed by that, it's just a beautiful industry to work within.
Okay, for the uninitiated out there, talk about the very basic differences between the services side and the brand side of things and what you have chosen to specialize in at MarketWake.
Absolutely. MarketWake, we specialize in two distinct areas. One is campaign strategy and the other is performance marketing. The campaign strategy comes in and figuring out what does a client have to say? What is important about it and how are we going to roll that out into the masses? The performance side of what we do is really the channel execution. And a lot of companies come to us and they're very interested in a specific channel. Let's say it's paid media or SEO or content creation. And that's amazing. Absolutely. We can step in and support them in a singular channel. Oftentimes, though, we have to back up and say, what are we saying to the world through that channel? That's just a means to the end. If we were to back up a little bit and say, what is your story and is it resonating with your audience? That's where the campaign strategy comes into play. And sometimes campaign strategy takes the entire brand into consideration. And sometimes it is more of, in which case, an evergreen campaign.
Sure.
Other times it comes in form of, hey, what's going to be entertaining? We live in a very high demand, high frequency world right now. There's a lot of news and content and videos and what is going to be entertaining and really cut through, whether that is a B2B client or a B2C client. It really comes down to the same thing. What are we saying? And then where are we going to say it? The brand side, when I'm referring to the brand side, that is a client. Those are any company that we work with. Typically, they have a singular product, sometimes singular service. But oftentimes those brands are very large, sweeping, known companies, household names.
Sure. Okay. All right. That I think that helps delineate. So do you, I think look, we talk a lot about people on this podcast, okay, for good reason. I'm trying to think of another industry in which the talent has to be so up to date and ever learning on different forms of technology, communication, and strategy. I'm having a hard time even thinking of one that surpasses.
If you find one, let me know.
Yeah.
Because that'll be our new hiring pool.
Right, right. it is, look, you need to be on your toes in every industry, I think, to be the best professional that you can be. But in your world, it is so ever-changing. So where I'm getting to is, Do you hire for specific capabilities, like you mentioned, campaign versus performance strategy, right? Do you hire people that are better at some type of services work than the other? Or are you saying, look, we are a nimble, small, growing organization. You've got to be able to do all of this if you want to rise up and be on this team.
We very much lean into, we're a little over 60 full-time people now, so we very much lean into specialty. Mm-hmm. We used to be the jack of all trades where you have to know a little bit about it all, and you do still have to have a working knowledge of all of it, but there is no way that someone who is excellent at paid media can also be excellent at creative. Those are very different skill sets. So we really look for people who want to be a craftsman.
Yeah.
Honestly, in the skill that they bring to the table. Now, does that mean if we find incredible talent that we're going to pass them by? No, I think that there's an ability to train people and
sure.
really find what they're best at. But we are at the point of looking at specialists over generalists.
Okay. Do you think that that sets you apart from maybe your competitors? Or is that a strategy that most executives have kind of narrowed in on?
Both and.
Yeah.
It does. It depends on the size, the scale, and then really what the expertise is. For instance, our account managers, a lot of times agencies use account managers as really the front lines and means of communication. Our account managers, they're strategists. They're the ones who have experience ideally in-house somewhere on brand side, who know what it's like to answer to investors, to answer to board members, to answer to an executive team, to have to work with sales and customer success. They have that working knowledge. And so when they come to be an account manager on our side, it's not just agency experience that they're bringing to the table. It's empathy to our own clients. And that has been astronomical in our growth.
Sure. I mean, people want to work with people that they like.
They do.
You know, it's, look, obviously you, the price of entry is you have to be incredible at what you do. But beyond that, it's actually somewhat freeing, assuming that you're a nice, interesting person that likes other people, how much just you and your own personality can really drive success and retention of clientele.
Amen. There, yeah. And also, there's so much of just business professionalism that we hide behind of, we're supposed to present something a certain way and here are the numbers and here's how we're going to tell that story. And you lose so much by, I call it the theatrics of the presentation, because there is a level of dissociation that occurs when you are trying to be the most professional version of yourself versus sitting on the same side of the table with your clients to say, all right, here's where we're at. Here's what we think is going to work. Here's why we think that. Here's the data to support it. Are you on board with this? And that collaboration of lowering your own guard, not taking yourself too seriously, but being on the same side of the table to get the job done together, it goes a really long way. And I think clients, they're used to working with agencies who have a little bit of an arm's length approach to things. We've been to baby showers and weddings and trips with our clients, and that's the way we like it.
I think that's right. And it's almost shocking, like, what such a little difference like that can make. Or, no, it's not shocking that makes a difference. It's understandable. What is shocking is that most people still hide behind that veneer of formality, maybe a little bit too much. I was talking with someone recently who started a new construction company, and they said what they thought was somewhat of a novel statement, like, we just like to be fun. We want to be fun to work with. And I was like, I can't tell you, like, how often I've actually used that word, because, like, yes, you need to be really good at what you do, but let's enjoy each other's time, right?
Absolutely.
There are going to be moments in any client service relationship that are stressful. And the more that we can at least have some levity and fun with each other, like, it just makes for a nicer experience in the day.
It does. It does. And I think it also directly impacts and lowers the degree of miscommunications. Because if you trust the person that you're working with on a daily basis, you give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe their email, their Slack came off a little harsh, but you know them because you've had good conversations with them outside of the workforce. And in that, all of these slights and miscommunications and defense mechanisms, they start to just disseminate. And that is really why we put a lot of emphasis in our culture of connecting with people first.
Yeah. What do you think is the most surprising thing that you wouldn't have expected to be a reality of your day-to-day since you kind of, you know, full-time kind of got back into Market Wake?
A reality of my day-to-day? the amount of meetings. So we are very much of an in-person culture. I think even back in 2020, we were still very much an in-person culture. And I think it has given us an edge to this point of being able to work quickly and efficiently and connect with each other. Our onboarding is weeks instead of months, which is very nice. I think I spend a lot of my day doing gut checks, making sure that I can be a sounding board for people. And then in this most recent acquisition, it's now building up a new team to run software in the middle of our normal day-to-day role of serving clients.
You know, you would, I don't think you will be shocked at how, in my line of business, how many executives get who ask me, it's like, I can't get people to come in. Like, what do I do? What's the silver bullet? I'm like, I'm not trying to be reductive, but as long as you're modeling that behavior and you're making this like a good, enjoyable place to be, and you have interesting people to be around, it shouldn't be that hard. there is not some magic formula here. This is like, do I have a mission that people believe in? Do I have other people that people want to be around? And it's, you know, I imagine it sounds like this is just something that you've been doing. It's not like there's this big magic formula of how I, you know, X plus Y plus Z equals people want to be around each other.
That is it. That is it. One, absolutely, to the modeling the behavior. The number of people that they're, how do you do this? I say, well, I'm in the office every single day. Like, oh, well, I can't do that. Like, well, then how do you expect your team to do that? You have to do it first. So I am in the office. But and then also from a culture perspective, we like each other. We have fun. It is a dog-friendly office, which is helpful because I do think that that matters.
I can attest that is a very enjoyable part of being
in
your office.
It is very enjoyable.
Yes.
But across the board, we enjoy spending time together. And it's fun. Our employees, they do trips together. They go to the beach together. They go skiing together. So they're friends in and outside of work, which again helps us just move so quickly because we start sharing brains, which sounds crazy, but we do. We start storing information in each other's minds. We know what someone else is going to say. We spend a lot of time together and it just helps us all be in sync. So our clients have a very similar experience, whether they're working with someone on the paid media side or on the creative side or on social media, because we are all really in sync and speaking the same language. But yes, you have to be able to model it. If you're not willing to do it, they probably won't either.
That's right. I mean, the work friendship, both personally and professionally, is so valuable and special. I feel very bad for people that are totally missing out on that. I don't think they're going to realize until later in their career like what they actually missed out on.
That's exactly it. Because we spend so much time at work, so much time in our jobs and in our careers and pursuing growth. And why not have a little fun along the way and do it with people that you actually care about personally, not just professionally?
Totally. I met my wife at work. You know?
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I love that.
Right. Okay, let's talk about this recent acquisition because I think that's very interesting. My guess, and you will confirm this or deny this, that this wasn't necessarily something that was planned. It just kind of happened.
Yes, absolutely. We have had a goal of some sort of acquisition for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. We have been down the road pretty far with a few different companies. And then at the last minute, and Raj, you've mentioned this too, it falls apart for whatever reason. And there are sometimes necessary reasons where that happens. This one, it came in our radar, and a couple months later, it kind of came back into our radar, and then a couple months later, it came back. And so it was one of those that I couldn't shake, but I wasn't sure if it was the right direction to go software again. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a tool that we use all the time. So we already had the benefit of having integrated into our work streams. Our clients were familiar with it. Our team was familiar with it. So really, it came down to, okay, do we have it in us to integrate a software into our processes seamlessly? Mm-hmm. How separate are these teams going to be? Because we have an amazing culture, and what we don't want to do is feel like we have two totally different teams working within the same umbrella. So what does that look like? And then do we have the appetite to scale? And when all of those came back, yes, we have the appetite to scale. No, we do not need to keep these very separate teams. Our team already has a lot of information on how to scale a tech company because the majority of our clients are B2B. We can do this. And it was very interesting to see the excitement that our management team and our leadership team had around this idea when I brought it to them. They were all in. And I was expecting and anticipating a little bit of pushback, and we received none. So when we went down that path, it's been amazing to see the adoption, the integration, the excitement, and the growth. Our team treats it, the software and that team, as if they've always been here.
That's great. That's wonderful. It sounds like that was, I'm sure you didn't expect maybe negativity, but it sounds like the seamlessness and the positivity was maybe somewhat surprising to you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, yes, it was. The product is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It works well. So I think that made it a whole lot easier too when they knew what a solid platform this was, especially it's a company called Punchlist. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of it is to collect, aggregate feedback, especially for creative teams, of which we are. So it's amazing. It integrates with Asana, it integrates with Monday, it integrates with Teamwork, all of these other web applications to manage projects and do project management. It already integrates with those. So for us to be able to collect feedback in one mechanism for whether it's a website or a PDF or any kind of creative material and then sync it into our project management system and create those tasks, it eliminated 15 steps from our day. Mm-hmm. So for our team, it was a no-brainer because it's already making our daily lives easier. Why not own it and grow it?
For sure. Final topic here. You know, Atlanta is kind of the, obscure reference, but it's kind of the Greek chorus in the background, I feel like, of this show, right? There's typically an Atlanta story, whether we're talking about organizations that are homegrown here in Atlanta or some sort of a business unit that moves here, right? It's always kind of shifting in the background, speaking to us in a different way. And I'm curious how you feel Atlanta has affected your success in your company.
I love Atlanta. I really do. I grew up here and promised myself I would never live here. So right after college,
same.
I never, ever, ever will I live here. I traveled about 32 weeks a year. I was working for a company out in California, thought that was going to be my new home. And after traveling that much for so many years, I realized there's nowhere like Atlanta. The opportunities, the people, the culture, the intersection of all different types. I mean, we have amazing D2C here, direct to consumer. We have amazing B2B in tech. We have amazing fintech. We have incredible investors and opportunities. It really is a playground for being an entrepreneur.
Sure.
And so I love it. And I think that the talent that we find here is pretty amazing. So as we're looking to grow and expand, it's another reason why we've continued to source talent here. And not to say that we don't have talent in other places, but we've just found over and over people are more willing to move here than even wanting to stay where they are and work remote.
Sure. Yeah. Well, especially if you're going to, look, if you're going to join a company like yours, I think that that person that you have vetted, right, if they come out the other end, they want to be part of the mission at this stage in the company.
Yes.
And of course, it helps that we happen to be located in a pretty cool city.
It sure does.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. Look, I felt the exact same way. And in, I think I've learned, but also Atlanta has, I think, become a much more interesting, fun place to live in the past 15 to 20 years or so.
I think so, too. It has changed quickly. It is not going to slow down by any means. I mean, even looking at, I can't remember, but I think it's between 6 and 10 million more people we're anticipating over the next 10 plus years. That's a lot of people. So I think that we're just getting started, to be honest with you.
I would agree. I think the most recent jump is we have gone from the 9th largest metro about 5 years ago to the 6th largest metro, leapfrogging Miami, Philly, and D.C., which is pretty impressive.
No small feat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Brooke, if someone listening to this wants to learn more about MarketWake, learn more about you, where do they go? How do they do that?
MarketWake.com. That is MarketWake. We get it all the time. Is it week? It's Wake.
W-A-K-E.
Yeah.
Yes.
MarketWake.com. And then feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Brooke B. McLean.
Okay. Brooke, Raj, thank you so much for sharing your stories.
Absolutely.
Oh, thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day, everyone. Thanks for listening to Tech Talk.